weekday sports beat on your home of the Irish. 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Martin for three. Got it!
The Clay Colonials win the state championship.
Notre Dame has beaten number one BC. Over the boards come the Irish.
Cubs win! Cubs win!
Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske win the Daytona 500.
The Stanley Cup to the Chicago Blackhawks. The Irish has upset Florida State. Notre Dame is number one.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And good evening, everyone. Sports Beat on the air. For this Wednesday evening, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds, and by Legacy Heating and Air. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune back in our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Dayton, Ohio. Cubs and Dragons play game two of their three-game series tonight at 7 o'clock on WSBT Radio. Pre-game coverage starts at 6:45. Wild game last night. Cubs were down 2-1 going to the top of the ninth, and the first 10 batters to the plate all reached, and the Cubs ended up sending 13 to the plate, scoring 8 runs and winning 9-2. And so now the race for the playoffs really heating up with 18 games to go. West Michigan in first, Dayton a game back. They're the wild card leaders. South Bend 2 in back of West Michigan, a game in back of Dayton, so the Cubs can tie for the wild card lead if they beat Dayton later tonight here on WSBT Radio. We have a lot of things popping up today. We just have kind of a potpourri, Eric, I guess, of a lot of different things that have come about this afternoon. For the second straight day, Notre Dame hockey has watched a player leave early to go pro. We have start times for Notre Dame football games. We have a defensive tackle the Irish are very interested in moving up his announced date. Is this good news for the Irish? We've got that to get to. We've got Tim Firestone, the owner of Blackthorn, coming up at 5:30 to prepare you for the Four Winds Invitational at Blackthorn next week. That is the Symetra Tour event in its sixth year at Blackthorn, and a whole lot more coming up here on WSBT Radio. And we might have a little more breaking news along the way before the bottom of this hour, so stand by for that. But Eric, let's just start with Notre Dame football. I guess people set their schedules around Notre Dame football games, and the month of September is now set. We knew the first two games, that Temple at home on September the 2nd was going to be a 3:30 start, and then the home game the following week, September 9th against Georgia, is going to be a 7:30 kickoff. So then back-to-back road games in Chestnut Hill and East Lansing, and today we found out the start time of those two games. It'll be Notre Dame at Boston College September 16th at noon, and then the following week in East Lansing against Sparty September 23rd. It'll be prime time football at 8 o'clock. So, Eric, there's always a concern of having too many prime time games. I guess it's refreshing to see the noon game in Chestnut Hill.
Yeah, it's refreshing, certainly, for people in my business, in the print media business. We're pretty thrilled about that. But, yeah, noon kickoff ESPN, and that makes some sense in that, you know, BC isn't expected to be an ACC contender out of the gate, although they were 7-6 last year. Not very good offensive team, very good defensive team. And then, you know, Notre Dame, people aren't quite sure what Notre Dame is going to be this year, but I see them in a lot of way too early top 25s, somewhere between 15 and 25. So that's a pretty good noon matchup there.
But I think we both agree you want to see not all primetime games just because of the late travel and sure, getting a late start on Sunday treatment and homework before you go back to school on Monday. So at least you get one of the road games at noon. Then you got Michigan State at 8 o'clock. That's not an awful travel back from East Lansing, so I think that one's okay. And then you got Miami, Ohio the following week at 5 p.m. So we're down to three games that we do not know start times for. October 7th in Chapel Hill against North Carolina. Then you've got November the 11th at Miami, Florida. And then November 25th at Stanford. Normally the Stanford game is prime time. You would think Carolina and Miami, if Notre Dame is playing pretty good football, Eric, there's a good chance those might be primetime games.
Absolutely. And while we're talking about primetime, we know one Notre Dame player who will not be playing in any of those games. And it was just announced by Illinois State that linebacker Josh Barajas is going to be transferring to that FCS program. He leaves Notre Dame 2 years into his college career. Very highly recruited linebacker from Valparaiso, Indiana, played his high school ball at Andrean High School over in Lake County, and he leaves with zero career tackles, kind of an enigmatic player during his two seasons at Notre Dame.
Almost hard to believe. He was kind of that big linebacker group, Eric, that came in a couple of years ago that had a lot of people very excited about the next 4 years for that particular part of the defense. But for Barajas, boy, it just never worked out here.
It didn't. You know, he came in and there was a thought that he might get involved in special teams or as a backup, as a true freshman. He was an outside linebacker in high school, put on a bunch of weight, and it wasn't all good weight, and he kind of played himself out of that position. They thought, well, maybe he can be an inside guy, so they redshirted him. And then last year he played in 9 games, didn't get a tackle, really kind of was searching for an identity among then the 3 linebacker spots. And you thought maybe when a new defensive coordinator came in with a new scheme, Mike Elko, new linebackers coach, kind of fresh set of eyes on things, that he would get a fresh start. But if anything, he went backwards in the spring. He finished the spring as the number 4 weak side linebacker, which is what they call their buck linebacker, behind Greer Martini, Tavon Coney, Asmar Bilal, and ahead of Drew White, only because Drew White's not on campus. So they have had nine linebackers at 2 positions. They'll now have 8, which is still pretty good depth. And so they're not going to miss him, but it was just strange. He was a good attitude kid, really talented. Notre Dame felt very fortunate. They poached him from Penn State's class. It was a class with a lot of 250, top 250 type players. In fact, 247 Sports had him as the number 108 prospect in the country. But it just didn't work out for whatever reason. You know, the good news for him is he can play right away because he's transferring down a level. And Illinois State's been in the playoffs, FCS playoffs, I think the last 3 years.
Yeah, they've been great.
And then this also solves the scholarship number problem. This knocks Notre Dame down to 85. So they are at the NCAA maximum for the first time since signing day.
Eric, do you feel like we're done with people now departing from Notre Dame? Is there anybody looming, or do you feel like, barring just a huge surprise, that the Notre Dame roster is set?
You know, I would be surprised if somebody else. I kind of, if you had asked me who would transfer off this roster, that would have been my number one candidate. And I don't like to speculate like that publicly, but, you know, you and I do privately.
Right.
You know, you might lose one other player that just doesn't see playing time or maybe had some academic difficulties in the spring, didn't like their GPA. You know, this is the time of year you usually find out about those. But this one's not a bombshell. It's a shame because, again, terrific family, great attitude, just didn't work out for him. But I think Brian Kelly has to feel happy for him that he found a spot where he can start over and get some playing time because it just wasn't happening. I mean, Jameer Jones and Jonathan Jones, they don't play necessarily the same position as him. Jameer and Jonathan both play the middle linebackers, but Barajas at one point was a backup middle linebacker last season. And so with those guys moving ahead of him, it was just kind of going backwards for him.
So again, Josh Barajas transferring from Notre Dame to Illinois State, former Purdue defensive coordinator Brock Spak, very successful head coach in Bloomington Normal for that Redbird program that, as Eric mentioned, has been doing great things for the last few years, and they have been making the postseason regularly at the FCS level. So Josh Barajas, 9 games, no tackles in 2 years in his Notre Dame career, and now moves on to the Redbird program. Eric Rivals has come out with their latest this 250 list, did we see a whole lot of movement from some of the Notre Dame recruits?
Well, I'm surprised there wasn't more movement. You know, there's five players out of that class that are in the top 250, and you know, Derek Allen is still the highest rated guy at number 47 overall. He's a safety from Georgia. I actually thought he'd move up based on some of his camps. Phil Jurkovec, the quarterback, who, again, hasn't been as sharp in some of these early camps and 7-on-7s because he was such an outstanding basketball player, and his team played for the state championship in Pennsylvania. He's 69 overall. And then you have Bo Bauer, who's 129. He's a linebacker for Pennsylvania. Micah Jones, that surprised me. He's in it. Wide receiver at 170. And Marky Stepp, running back at 224. I am absolutely shocked the Adamalola twins aren't in, or at least Jason Adamalola. There is a huge discrepancy between where 247 rates Jason Adamalola as the number 6 defensive tackle and Rivals as the number 19 defensive tackle. But these things usually kind of straighten themselves out eventually. I can remember Liam Eichenberg was not rated even as a 4-star by Rivals, even though all these big-time programs, including Ohio State, wanted him. And you look at him as a redshirt freshman at Notre Dame, and he looks every bit a 4-star kind of guy with a real bright future. So, you know, sometimes, again, I think the recruiting evaluations have not kept up as well with the recruiting calendar, the way it's moved up. You know, you have a lot of really weird ratings this early. So I would say I'm surprised more guys like Ogie Ogufu, the linebacker from Michigan. I mean, that guy got invited to the opening, as did Jason Adamalola, which is a big camp in Oregon in the summer. And usually if you are invited to that, you're kind of a top 150 kind of player, top 200 kind of player at the least. And again, neither of those guys jump in there. So it's kind of a weird ranking. But, you know, I think, for example, I think that the Twins will move up a lot. I think another guy that will move up is Jurkovec once he plays his senior year. Remember, he suffered a thumb injury kind of mid to late season for his team, and he was putting up huge numbers before that injury, then played basketball. But I think his senior year, you'll start to see him move back up, you know, possibly into the top 40.
Going through a bunch of Notre Dame football news and notes on this Wednesday, Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. A new batch of stories up right now at IndyInsider.com. These things we're talking about, including Josh Barajas transferring to Illinois State. Mike Varell's got a story up, I believe, already on that particular subject. I don't know if it was you or Mike that wrote it, but I know Mike posted it. So that story is up there. The Notre Dame football start times announced today. BC at noon, Michigan State at 8 o'clock. Read all about it right now at IndyInsider.com and in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section. Another recruiting nugget, Eric. Why don't you tell the folks about defensive tackle Jamian Franklin? He has decided to move up his announcement date on what school he's going to pick. Is this good news for the Irish?
I think it is, and I know Tyler will talk about it a little bit tomorrow, and he is a kid from the East Coast, from Maryland, who's a pretty highly recruited defensive tackle, and I think that it is a really good sign for Notre Dame that he is committing as early as he has. Or early as he's going to be. It'll be June 6th, which is next week. And when I tweeted that, you know, he was a Notre Dame target last night, he liked the tweet. And so you can interpret that any way you want to. But I think Notre Dame is getting a really good defensive tackle if it ends up going that way. And I certainly expect it will. Had this dragged on a little bit longer, you know, maybe some more people could have gotten involved. He is from Ridgely, Massachusetts. He's 6'3", 305 pounds. You know, he was starting to pick up momentum with his recruiting a lot of ACC schools involved with him, some Big Ten schools. But Notre Dame really liked them. They had him really high on their board. And that gives them another interior defensive lineman to go along with Jason Adamalola that I think really gives them a pretty good, puts them in a pretty good spot where, you know, I think they could be really picky about if they take anybody else in the interior of the defensive line. And we know P.J. Mustipher from Maryland area, which is Sam Mustipher's younger brother, is also in the mix along with Penn State and Ohio State. So that could be the third defensive tackle if they elect to take another one.
Okay, so there's news on Franklin. And, Eric, I'll let you tackle one more storyline, then I'll handle the Notre Dame hockey story from today. But last night you had the chance to talk to Erin Boley, who played for the Irish women's basketball program last year. She announced soon after the season was over she was going to transfer. She's picked a new school. I'll let you take the story from there.
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to Erin. She ended up visiting Vanderbilt and Stanford, two of the programs that she was involved with coming out of high school in Hodgsonville, Kentucky. She went to Elizabethtown High School, and she ended up picking Oregon, the third school that she visited, a school she was not involved with coming out of high school. If you remember Oregon in the NCAA women's tournament, they kind of squeaked into the tournament as a 10 seed. They had a losing record in the Pac-12. And then they went out, and they were the Cinderella team. They upset number 7 Temple, then number 2 Duke, then number 3 Maryland in succession. And they couldn't pull off the upset of Connecticut, but I think they wore them out for Mississippi State. So she's going to an up-and-coming program.
Yeah.
Their best two players, leading scorer and leading rebounders, are true freshmen. So by the time she's eligible, they'll all three be juniors. She'll have 3 years of eligibility left. And she said, you know, that she felt like this transfer had a lot to do with relationships. She said, I was looking for a family atmosphere, somewhere where I could really make a home and have really good relationships. I wanted to be around coaches that were really invested in me and believed in me and were going to be great mentors and people that felt like family to me. That's really what I was looking for the most.
I just happened to see Oregon play a couple of times during the tournament. They were young and they were talented. And yeah, they ran into Connecticut, which everybody, one team walked away kind of shaking their head, and that wasn't much of a game. But that's a heck of a place for her to land, a good young team for her to grow up with. So Erin Boley has decided to play her next women's college basketball game with the University of Oregon. We'll wrap up this segment with a little Notre Dame hockey. And today it was announced that goaltender Cal Peterson will forego his last year of eligibility, and he is going to sign a contract with the National Hockey League later this summer. Now, basically, here's the situation. You go back to 2013, Peterson was a fifth-round pick of the Buffalo Sabres. With the way the collecting bargaining agreement is in the National Hockey League, teams have 4 years from the time of the draft to sign that player. If 4 years go by, then that player becomes a free agent. So, with that being said, the Buffalo Sabres, who still have his draft rights for 30 more days, they have 30 days to sign Cal Peterson. If he elects not to sign or they cannot come to an agreement, after 30 days, then Cal is eligible to sign with any team in the National Hockey League. It's just once the four-year window passes, then you basically are a free agent. We saw Thomas DePaulie last year do the very same thing. He was drafted by the Washington Capitals. They could not come up with an agreement. After 4 years passes, he signed a free agent contract to be a part of the Pittsburgh Penguins organization. Peterson has that option. I think what is interesting right now with Cal, the Buffalo Sabres, since the completion of a very disappointing season this year, fired their head coach and fired their general manager. So the general manager and Peterson and his group that has I can't say agent because you don't have agents until you sign with them after your college career. But advisors is the word I was looking for. I mean, they had a relationship, and now that relationship is gone. I got to be honest, I was offended by the Buffalo Sabres GM right before the NCAA tournament. He was asked about Cal, and I'm going to paraphrase, and he basically said that Cal had nothing left to prove in college, and he knows what we want from him. Well, at that point, it was kind of like, you know, we are still trying to get to the Frozen Four and win a national championship, and Cal is still with his teammates. He's the captain of the hockey team. So I was taken aback by those comments. So the fact when he got fired, I did not shed any tears, and I don't mean that in a mean way. I just thought it was a ridiculous statement to make. So it comes down to Cal can sign with the Sabres over the next 30 days. At that point, he becomes a free agent, and he can pick and choose where he wants to go. He can find a team that is looking for goaltending help, and possibly that could be the difference. Maybe he wants to sign with a Midwest team. He's from Iowa. It'll be up to him. But Cal this season with the Irish, 23-12-15, a .222 goals against average, a .926 save percentage. First team All Hockey East. He was unbelievable the last 3 years, and he finished his career with 90 consecutive starts, the fourth longest streak in NCAA Division I history. And not only was he one hell of a goaltender, but what a great teammate, a great individual, great kid. Could not be more happy for him. He leaves Notre Dame with 55 wins, a .230 goals against average, a .924 save percentage, and he can say his final game with the Irish, he played at the United Center in Chicago in the Frozen Four, and he helped the Irish get there for a third time in program history. So Cal Peterson moving on to the NHL, plays to be determined, and you've got Cale Morris coming back in goal for the Irish, and a very intriguing player now will be coming in. His name is Dylan St. Cyr. And St. Cyr initially was a Michigan verbal commitment. They ran out of scholarships and money, so he became available. Notre Dame was able to secure a commitment from him. And he has a very interesting background, Eric. He is the son of, and I always forget how to pronounce her first name, Manel Riome. She was the female goaltender back in the 90s that actually played in a Tampa Bay Lightning exhibition game. She was the first female to play in an NHL exhibition game, and Riome was well known for her time in minor league hockey. So this is the son of Riome, and he's going to be playing for the Fighting Irish, and he played against Minnesota Duluth earlier this year for the USA under 18 team, and Duluth was the team that was the runner-up to Denver in the national championship game. They were a heck of a hockey team, and I guess he played unbelievable. The two teams played to a 1-1 tie, and he was absolutely the difference in that game. He's not 6 foot, he's like 5'10 5'11 from what I understand. Extremely talented, and he and Cale Morris will battle for playing time for the Fighting Irish this fall. So within 2 days of each other, Anders Bjork and Cal Peterson leave for the professional ranks. Good luck to them. Still an outstanding nucleus for Notre Dame hockey coming back this season as they join the Big Ten Conference. So a lot of good things still happening around the Irish program. Just no more Anders Bjork. He signs with the Bruins, and Cal Peterson will sign with either the Sabres over the next 30 days or another team after 30 days. So, Eric, that's the way we line up for Notre Dame hockey this year, as two great players and two great individuals are off to the pros, but they have 3 years done at Notre Dame, one more year to go. Both will get their degrees, which obviously, in my eyes, is the most important thing besides being heck of a hockey players for the Irish the last couple of years.
Real quick question. If you were advising Peterson, would you tell him to go with Buffalo, or would you tell him to take advantage of that free agent wild card he is?
I'm a Bruins fan. I don't want him to go to an arch rival.
Okay.
So I want him to sign with a free agent. No, I don't know if they really have that. Sports Beat continues, brought to you by Budweiser and Legacy Heating and Air. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune, back in our WSBT studios. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Dayton, Ohio. Cubs and Dragons tonight at 7 o'clock on WSBT Radio. Joining us on the phone, Tim Firestone, owner of Blackthorn Golf Club in South Bend, tournament director for next week's Four Winds Invitational, and, of course, one of the co-hosts of The Golf Show, which you can hear every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on 96.1 FM WSBT. Timothy, how are you today?
I am great. The sun is shining. It's a great day for golf. So I am doing fantastic today. How are you?
I'm good. It's 5:35. You can still get out to Blackthorne and get a bunch of holes in tonight.
Absolutely. It's not getting dark till almost 9:30, so you can sneak in a quick nine after work. Course is in great shape. I'm really excited about next week and having the Symetra Tour in town. And I think we moved it up a week, and I think course condition wise, that's better for us, especially the way the weather's been this year, at least. But the golf course is absolutely spectacular right now.
Let me start off by just saying this is the sixth year that the Symetra Tour has been to Blackthorne, June 9th, 10th, and 11th. Tim, when you started this, did you see this going 6 years and possibly well beyond that?
No, not really, Darren. I think that, it was kind of a trial year when we tried it just to see how it would work and how the community would respond. And, at the end of the day, this has really turned into a staple event here in the community in the summer. And couldn't be happier and more proud of what we've accomplished through with sponsors and the media and volunteers and just the entire community and every year adding new events to the tournament week and trying to get more and more people in the Michigan area involved with the Four Winds Invitational.
Tim, this is Eric Hansen. I'm curious, in the past I know that there have been some golfers with local ties in the tournament. Do you have anybody like that this year?
Yeah, there's quite a few, actually, just to name a couple. Becca Huffer is in the field, who played at Notre Dame. She graduated a couple years ago. We have Kelly Grassel, who is from kind of northwest Indiana, Chesterton area, who was the Indiana state champion and then played at the University of Florida, has just graduated from University of Florida. And then Jennifer Song, also, who's a local player here from Penn High School, who graduated a while ago, is also playing in the field. So, yeah, there's a couple players this year in the field that have some ties here to the local community.
Tim Firestone, the owner of Blackthorne Golf Club, tournament director for next week's Four Winds Invitational, our guest on WSBT Radio. 2 years ago, Brooke Henderson won the Four Winds Invitational. Now she's in television commercials, and she's battling for majors on the LPGA Tour. Tim, how much of a difference has this golf tournament made for some of the winners of the Four Winds Invitational?
Well, that's a great question, and I'll tell you, every one of our winners has gone on to secure their LPGA card and play on the big stage. So it is really neat to be involved and to be able to help these young women fulfill their lifelong dreams of playing professional golf on the LPGA Tour. And without the support of the volunteers and the sponsors and everything that we do here, we wouldn't be able to do that. But it's really neat to be able to see the impact we're making.
Tim, through the years with this tournament, it seems like it gets bigger and better each year. What have you learned about from the early years that have made it just even bigger and better in its current kind of form?
Well, what I've learned is you never can have enough porta-johns, Eric. So we always increase the number of porta-johns every year. but, no, I think, the key to the success of the tournament is just getting as many people as we can exposed to the tournament. I think a lot of in the community, they may think, women's golf and, how entertaining it's going to be. But as Darren can attest, and Eric, I think you've been out there too and seen how talented these young ladies are. It's unbelievable how good they are. They're literally, a stroke or two away from playing on the LPGA Tour. And it's mostly putting and short game, believe it or not, is the deficiency at this level. But a lot of the young ladies, they hit it 270 off the tee and are great with their irons. And it's really just kind of pinpointing that short game. So it's neat to see how talented these people are. And then again, just trying to get more and more people exposed. When we bring sponsors into this event, very rarely do we lose them. I mean, if you look through our sponsorship list, a lot of them have been there since day one. Have been here with us all 6 years. So it's really neat to see how people get attracted to those events once they're exposed to it.
Let me guess, not having enough portable Johns. I assume that's John Foster complaining, right?
Yeah, he's getting up there in age, and he's got to go more frequently than others. So yeah, that definitely came from him.
Okay, we got our golf show shining on him. Now we can move on.
There we go.
Tim, the one thing that's great about the game of golf and it's PGA Tour, LPGA Tour, whatever type of level, charities and communities always are a big, big beneficiary of these golf tournaments. I mean, think about the money raised on the PGA Tour every year. It's unbelievable. Well, with the Four Winds Invitational, Tim, over the first 5 years, you've raised over $350,000 for Beacons Children's Hospital. I know this is something you're very, very proud of, and I feel like you need to brag a little bit. Just talk about some of the items that, because of this golf tournament, are now available at Beacons Children's Hospital and what might be in the future.
Well, that, and I'm glad you brought that up too, Darren. You know, from Four Winds and the Pokagon Band's perspective, that was one of the top three goals that we had when we put this thing together, is to make sure we made a big impact when it came to charity and the community. And we picked Beacon Children's Hospital, and they've been a great partner for all 6 years. And we've been able to help them secure equipment for the MedFlight helicopter, so when they're transporting babies and children, whether it's in an incubator or a portable like MRI machine, we've helped even with some of the construction of the brand new Beacon Children's Hospital, giraffe warmers, like baby warmers when they're in the neonatal units. So it's kind of cool to see how the dollars are actually being spent. You know, a lot of times you give money to charity, you don't really know where your dollars are, but to have a tangible asset that you can look at and see and know the impact on how you're saving young children's lives is pretty impactful. So we're very, very fortunate, like I mentioned earlier, with all the support in this community, to have raised that kind of money. We raise more money at this event than in the other event on the Symetra Tour. So
wow.
It just shows you how charitable this community is, and how charitable the Four Winds and the Pokagon Band have been. But to raise that kind of money on this tour is really spectacular.
Tim, last one from me. Speaking of community connections, isn't there a connection with the players and families in the area as well?
Yeah, that's also been very neat. You know, even I can tell firsthand how a player that has been, we've hosted it in our home through the years, Jackie Stolting, actually won our event last year and is now on the LPGA Tour. It was neat to see her win, and my girls got to know her, and they correspond, you know, via text message and all the other social media stuff. So, we have players that have formed relationships with families here in the community and that stay with them, because it gets expensive for these young women on the road, and they stay in hotels and pay in a caddy and meals. So, yes, it's a very vital part of hosting a tournament like this, is to help the players who need a little help with having somewhere to stay.
Tim Fireson from Blackthorn talking about the Four Winds Invitational. Let's get out some information to the public so they can be prepared for next week. Besides the golf tournament, we'll talk about that in a second. What are some of the things our community can get involved with, leading up to the event? Because I know you have some other events like a 5K coming up.
Yeah, so I think there's three, you know, what I would call standout events that the community can participate in. The first is Thursday night. Kelly Cares and Pocky Kelly have sponsored a brand new event that we started called the Ladies Golf Clinic 101, where we'll have LPGA players on the driving range and doing a clinic. Pocky Kelly will do a little question and answer. We'll do a little Q&A with the players. And just a great way for ladies to maybe get introduced to the game of golf that have not done so before, or also for those ladies that do play, that to interact with the LPGA players and get some tips on their game. Mm-hmm. So you can sign up for that. That's open to the public. Also, we do the Daddy-Daughter Pro-Am, and this is one of my favorite events. We're the only event on the tour that does this, but the dads can bring their daughter out. And we have daughters that are, you know, 50 years old, the dad's 70 years old, and we have as young as 5-year-old daughters playing with their dads. So it's really cool. You can bring your daughter out, and you can play with the players. The players love that event as well, as a lot of these young women started playing golf because of their dads. So for them, it's really special to be out there and play in that event. So the Daddy-Daughter Pro-Am is really cool. 9-hole tournament, not competitive. We do ice cream and hot dogs. It's really laid back and just an opportunity for your child to get to meet and play with an LPGA player. And then the 5K on Sunday morning, is also open to the public. We actually do a 5K on the golf course. You run all along the back nine at Blackthorn, which for those of you that have been out there, you know it's beautiful terrain, gorgeous morning, and we run before the players tee off on Sunday morning. I say we run. Obviously, I don't run, Darren, but they run. I watch the 5K. And the participants love it because it's a challenging course and it's different. You know, a lot of 5Ks are ran on the streets around town. But to actually run a 5K on a golf course is unique, and a lot of people like that.
So then the golf tournament, June 9th, 10th, and 11th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Thanks to Martin Supermarkets, Tim, the opportunity for people to come out to Blackthorn and enjoy this event have now increased.
Yeah, my good friend Dave Mayfield and Martin Supermarkets stepped up again and really helped us try to figure out how do we get more people to come out and again, be introduced to the Symetra Tour and the Four Winds Invitational. And this was a creative way to do that. So it's a free way to spend the day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then on Sunday as well, we do, it's Kids Day. From 10 to 2, we've got arts and crafts and face painting and soccer shots will be there and all kinds of different games and activities for kids that we do on the old Blarney Hole. And then obviously free admission into the golf tournament. And then we do free hot dogs and ice cream for kids. So it's a great awesome way of having some fun, affordable entertainment here in South Bend.
Finally, when people come out to Blackthorn to play golf, they park at the clubhouse. That area is for the golfers next weekend. So, Tim, for the public coming out to Blackthorn, easiest way to park?
Yeah, so the parking for the public will be off of Moreau Court, which is off of Nymphs Parkway. There'll be signs there on Nymphs Parkway leading people down to park. And you actually enter in the main gate for spectators is over by a 13th hole, which is on the east side of the golf course. But if you're heading out to Blackthorn, either way, you'll see signs that'll lead you right to the public parking.
That's the Four Winds Invitational next weekend. FourWindsInvitational.com is the website, and Tim Firestone is the owner at Blackthorn. And the golf course will be open until when for the public?
Golf course is open until Sunday at 3 p.m.
Okay. Sunday at 3 p.m. for golfers. And then the Four Winds Invitational coming back to Blackthorn, sixth time that the Symetra Tour has been at Blackthorn. And Tim will be out there as tournament director and owner of Blackthorn. And Tim, thank you for your time. Best wishes next week. I know we'll talk again on Saturday on the golf show to get some more information out there, but it is a wonderful event. The volunteers are amazing, and you've done a heck of a job with this tournament. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate your support. And have a great night. We'll talk to you Saturday, Darren.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Tim Firestone, owner of Blackthorn and the tournament director of the Four Winds Invitational. Out at Blackthorn next week, the actual tournament, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. FourWindsInvitational.com, BlackthornGolf.com to get more information on this professional golf tournament coming back to South Bend. 12 minutes in front of the top of the hour. We have the My 5 Question of the Day coming up next. And today it is the five ways the new Notre Dame Rover position will impact the Irish defense. Eric has the answers next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Today's question, the five ways the new Notre Dame Rover position will impact the Irish defense. Eric Hansen has his answers ready to go. We'll begin with answer number five.
Number five, I'm going with, it gives you a coverage guy with really good run-stopping skills. And so when you think about Notre Dame's Rover, it's either going to be Asmar Bilal, more likely in most situations, Drew Tranquil. You're talking about a 6'2", 230-pound player that can move pretty well.
Number four.
Number four, it theoretically gives you the antidote for third down specialty situations. You know, if the other team is up tempoing you and you can't change personnel, you've got a pretty versatile player on the field that can line up at three different levels.
We are going through Eric's five ways the new Notre Dame Rover position will impact the Irish defense. Here comes answer number three.
You theoretically, and I always say theoretically because we have to see how it works at Notre Dame versus Wake Forest, you will get favorable coverage matchups versus a strong safety who is much easier to kind of isolate in a one-on-one situation that wasn't favorable. You know, too often last year, Notre Dame would get a really speedy slot receiver against a strong safety, and that's not a matchup you want. This way, you're more likely to get a running back or a tight end.
We're up to answer number two.
Something Notre Dame needs desperately, pass rush. Last year, Wake Forest's Rovers had more sacks than anybody on Notre Dame's team individually, so that's a good sign.
So we are going through the five ways the new Notre Dame Rover position will impact the Irish defense. Number five, coverage guy with run-stop skills. Number four, third down specialty player. Three, favorable coverage matchup. Number two, pass rush. And answer number one is...
matchup problems for the quarterback. Because of the formational and skill set versatility of this position, Darren, he can line up just about anywhere on the field, and he can also do a variety of jobs. So if you're a quarterback, you're usually looking for that middle linebacker, and then you kind of set your protections based on what the middle linebacker is doing. You're also going to have to account for this guy. You're going to have to find him in the formation, which, again, if you're up-tempoing, is going to slow you down a little bit.
That is today's My Five Question of the Day from Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Oh, we got a whole bunch of stuff, and we'll start with Josh Barajas, Notre Dame linebacker, transferring to Illinois State. Notre Dame football kickoff times for road games at BC and Michigan State. We got a Notre Dame football recruiting notebook from Tyler. Lindsey Allen re-signs with the New York Liberty. She'll face Skylar Diggins in her NBA debut on Friday. We got a St. Joe tennis feature from Lewis. We got a Brandywine girls tennis feature on Megan Schmidt from Jack. South Bend Cubs on the road versus the Dayton Dragons, and much, much more.
Is that it?
Woo! That's it. And Cal Peterson going pro from Notre Dame Hockey.
Thank you. I thought you were missing something there, but you totally redeemed yourself by mentioning that. All coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
And one more thing. Tom Noy has a live chat tomorrow at 10:30 talking Notre Dame men's basketball.
Okay, very good. So that's at ndinsider.com if you want to chat to Tom Noy about the Fighting Irish basketball team. Don't ask him about Brandon Wimbush, though. Just keep it to basketball. Trust me on that. All right, couple of minutes left in this hour. We're going to recap some of the Notre Dame football news at the start of next hour. But let me just offer a couple of tidbits, because tonight is game two of the Stanley Cup final in Pittsburgh. Game one, Monday night, a weird game. The Penguins won 5-3 over Nashville. So former Notre Dame hockey players Ian Cole and Brian Rust, three victories away from repeating as Stanley Cup champions. Pittsburgh built a 3-0 lead after the first period. Their third goal was a ricochet off a Predators player's leg into the net, and Pittsburgh was dominating, but they went the next 37 minutes without a shot on goal. And Pittsburgh is so fast, so talented, it's almost hard to believe that's possible, but that's what happened in Nashville. Picked up a power play goal in the second, a power play goal in the third, then tied it on a 5-on-5 goal. But then 3-3 late in the third, Jake Guentzel scored the game winner for Pittsburgh with 3:17 left. And for Guentzel, it was his first goal in like eight games, but he leads the Stanley Cup playoff participants with 10 goals. He was almost benched. They kept him in. And, of course, Eric, there's always a Notre Dame tie-in. Jake Guentzel is the younger brother of former Irish forward Ryan Guentzel, who was a part of the Frozen Four team in 2011. So they end up getting an empty net goal. 12 shots on goal with the Penguins in game one, fewest by a team in the Stanley Cup final since the stat became official in 57-58. So I'm not sure what to think. Pittsburgh does not play their best. They still win. If you're Nashville, you outplayed Pittsburgh, but you lost. So I kind of feel like advantage Pittsburgh in that particular scenario. They're back home for game two. But Nashville, they played pretty well. They feel like they have to have a good shot in game two. And we'll see what happens later tonight at 8 o'clock. Eric enjoyed it. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it.
He's Eric Hansen. Sean Stiers will join me for...
This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on your home of the Irish. 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's a home run ball. Going for it is Fuller. He's out there. He catches it! Touchdown, Notre Dame!
Jackson with a spectacular spin move, and now the no-look pass to Zach August for the two-handed slam!
Adios! Two-run home run, Gleyber Torres.
Kaiser looks, timing pattern.
Caught, touchdown, Notre Dame. Corey Hunter Jr.
Number one goes down at Notre Dame again!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
6 minutes after 6 o'clock, hour number two of Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser and Legacy Heating and Air. Sean back at our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Dayton. Cubs and Dragons tonight at 7. Jordan Automotive Group pregame show tonight at 6:45 on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT. We have rapid fire coming up in a couple of moments, but I think we have some bits and pieces of things to talk about in our opening segment. A lot of little things happened today involving Notre Dame athletics, and we'll get you a final score on the Cubs and Padres in just a second as that game is almost over out in San Diego. We'll start with Notre Dame football, Sean, and a couple of start times have been announced for road games, so we now know the entire September start time schedule. We've got September 16th at Boston College, a noon kickoff, September 23rd at Michigan State, prime time at 8 o'clock. Of course, every Irish football game on WSBT Radio. But BC at noon, Michigan State at 8 o'clock, so that maybe breaks up a string of primetime games, getting that game at noon on September the 16th at Boston College.
That's right, and I know a lot of people just kind of looking at Twitter today were pretty happy about that noon kickoff. You have the two extremes there with the noon and the 8, but I think everyone, especially when you're on the road, likes those noon kickoffs. The earlier, the better. And then especially guys like Eric Hansen, who is leaving here, and the newspaper guys who've got to file their stories and everything. I know they like them. So, but to interrupt this thought a little bit, Jason Hayward, it looked like, just popped out, and the Cubs have been swept by the Padres.
Six straight losses for the Cubs, 2-1 the final, 3 base hits today. 3. Schwarber went 0-for-4 with 2 more strikeouts, hitting 140. Bryant went 1-for-3. Rizzo 0-for-3, now hitting 227. Happ went 0-for-4, hitting 214. Hayward 0-for-4, 257. Contreras and Baez had the other 2 base hits. And Arrieta actually pitched well today.
Mm-hmm.
6 innings, 5 hits, an earned run, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. Gave up a home run to Ryan Schimpf, who actually played for Lansing a couple of years ago. He is the classic hit or miss. He has 14 home runs. He's hitting 168. It's either great or nothing. And Franchi Cordero, who played in the Midwest League a couple of years ago for Fort Wayne, had a triple in the 8th inning. He later scored the winning run off Koji Uehara. So the Cubs have now lost 6 games in a row. They're swept in L.A., and they're swept in San Diego, and they are thankful for a day off tomorrow.
And it's just the craziest thing. And we knew that the Reds and the Giants weren't that great, but they did just go 7-2 at home. They beat a good hitting Milwaukee team at home, 7-2 on that homestand, and they left on such a positive vibe. And I think if you would have asked me to predict going out, I would have thought, okay, maybe they do lose 2 out of 3 to the Dodgers. Okay, so they lose 2 out of 3. I would have thought they would have won at least 2 out of 3 against the Padres and come home with a split. There's no way I would have ever thought that they would lose all 6 games out there in California.
Yeah, the internet just went out here in Dayton. I was going to look it up, but I know the first 2 games in L.A., they were shut out. And then they scored 4 in the 3rd game. And they scored 1 today. So, gosh, I'm trying to remember the first 2 games of the San Diego series. They could not have scored more than 7 or 8 runs in that 6-game road trip to the West Coast.
Hang on just a sec. I've got it right here. Okay. So, yeah, they lost 6-2 yesterday, 5-2 the day before that. So, 4 games. So, basically, 5 runs in the 3 games, and all 4 runs they scored against the Dodgers were in 1 game. So
they had 9 runs in 6 games.
Yep.
Wow. I mean, everybody's having a bad year all at once. Although Hayward, I guess, he's still hitting in the 250s, which is so much better than last year. But everybody else has taken a step back. It's almost unthinkable. So the Padres win today by a final score of 2-1. And since we're on Major League Baseball, Diamondbacks and Pirates are in the top of the 12th, tied at 5 in Pittsburgh. Athletics and Indians just underway in Cleveland, no score. Blue Jays edge the Reds today, 5-4. Astros hit 6 or 7 home runs and beat the Twins 17-6. George Springer had a 473-foot home run. Good grief. The stat of the day, the Phillies have now trailed in 27 consecutive games. They lost today to the Marlins 10-2.
Wow.
Wow. 27 straight games.
Here's the other, another thing, though. You mentioned Toronto beating Cincinnati, and you remember the Blue Jays. They've been kind of one of the most disappointing teams to start off the season. They started out 2-11. They are now just a game under 500 after beating Cincinnati today. So they are within striking distance of working their way out of that big hole they started out, and a chance to get to 500 with one more win.
That would mean I think they're 24-16 then since that start.
Yeah.
And their pitching is getting healthy. J.A. Happ is back. I know Francisco Liriano is coming off the DL. He might have pitched today, as a matter of fact. And then Aaron Sanchez, who's been on the DL 3 times, big part of the rotation. The Yankees and Orioles kind of out in front. Orioles are struggling lately. Yankees are still playing well. Maybe there's time to get back on the race for the Blue Jays.
I think I heard Pat Hughes. I was listening to that broadcast, the Cubs broadcast, off and on this afternoon. I'm pretty sure I heard him say toward the end of the game, San Diego has now won 77 straight games at home when they have the lead entering the ninth inning.
And that's post Trevor Hoffman.
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing that a team, and they have the current active record in that department with 77 straight wins at home when they have the lead entering the ninth. That's a pretty, as you said, without Trevor Hoffman, one of the premier closers in the game for such a long time, you would not think that the Padres of all teams would be the team that has a streak like that.
Hard to hit a home run there, but at the same time, there's a lot of gaps in the power alley since it's a bigger ballpark, but that I would not have guessed the Padres. I probably would have guessed them about 27th or 28th out of all the teams in Major League Baseball. All right, so again, in terms of Notre Dame football, we mentioned the start times at BC September 16th at 12, at Michigan State September 23rd at 8. During the 5 o'clock hour, Illinois State announced that linebacker Josh Barajas is transferring from Notre Dame to the FCS Redbirds. Barajas in 2 years with the Irish, 9 games, no tackles. Hard to believe when you think back to the recruiting cycle 2 years ago that Josh Barajas would be leaving Notre Dame, let alone 9 games, no tackles. He seemed like a part of an outstanding linebacking core brought in 2 years ago. But that linebacking core still has not lived up to expectations. Maybe we get a little more out of Asmar Bilal this year at the Rover position or possibly a linebacker position. But a real head-scratcher knowing how talented, how well-grounded, comes from a great family, according to Eric, that this didn't work out for Josh Barajas.
Yeah, he came in with a 4-star rating, according to a couple of the different services, and in the top 200 in the nation. So there were some kind of lofty expectations on this guy. And then you had the coaching change and the new defense. To his credit, he stuck with it for at least another semester, gave it a shot, but still couldn't make any headway on the depth chart coming out of spring in Mike Elko's defense. And so he saw the writing on the wall. And I think there are a lot of guys, and I talked to my sister, she was a Division I basketball assistant for a long time, and she's coaching, head coach at a D2 right now. And we've kind of talked about some of these players who don't necessarily have a grasp of reality of who they are and what their standing is. And sometimes they kind of, you know, beat their own heads against the wall, and they're not willing to move down another level to give themselves at least a shot to get some playing time and stuff like that. So when you look at a guy like this, at least you can say, okay, he's got a grasp of reality and he's got eligibility left, and rather than just sit here and be frustrated by his situation. Now, of course, he has to give up the Notre Dame degree and all that kind of stuff. But from a playing standpoint, the guy wants to play. And so more power to him. He's going to go out and give himself a chance to play for a couple of years.
Illinois State's been in the playoffs in the FCS the last couple of years. Former Purdue defensive coordinator Brock Spack as the head coach has done a great job with the Redbirds. So good luck to Josh Barajas in his new adventure in Bloomington, Normal, Illinois. From the recruiting news cycle, defensive tackle Jamian Franklin, a guy the Irish are very interested in, moves up his college choice decision date to June 6th. Eric feels like that is good news for the Fighting Irish, so we'll see what happens in about a week, who Franklin chooses. And in terms of Notre Dame hockey, Cal Peterson has decided to forego his final year of eligibility. The Irish goaltender will either sign with the Buffalo Sabres over the next 30 days, the team that drafted him, or after 30 days he becomes a free agent because 4 years will have passed since he was drafted by the Sabres in 2013. Collective bargaining agreement. The NHL is wild. It's wacky. Don't have me explain it. I'm trying to keep it simple. But Cal will be playing professional hockey with an NHL team or a minor league team next year. And Dylan St. Cyr and Cale Morris will be the two guys starting for the Irish probably next year. And goal, St. Cyr will be a freshman. And again, Riome, his mom, was the first ever female goaltender to play in an exhibition game in the NHL with the Tampa Bay Lightning 2 decades ago. So a good story coming to the Irish hockey program. All right, that's kind of the news and notes of the day. Why don't we take a timeout when we come back? Then we'll start rapid fire for this Wednesday as Sean has, I'm sure, a good list of topics ready to go. Give me one.
How about DeShone Kizer? Some of his prospects with the Cleveland Browns.
Okay. I'm ready to answer.
All right.
We'll get the full question in a moment. You're listening to Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser and Legacy Heating and Air and Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Thank you. Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. Sean Steyer, Darren Pritchett with you. We have two parts lined up for rapid fire before we get to Cubs baseball at 6:45. So we'll have an intermission in between some rapid fire questions. So let's get to the first half.
All right. Well, we're going to start off with a little bit of football. We talked about Notre Dame's kickoff times. Of course, you mentioned the September 16th game at Boston College is going to kick off at noon. The Michigan State game will kick off at 8 o'clock. So what is your ideal start time, Darren, whether you're watching or covering a game of any kind?
I would say if I'm a fan, I kind of like a 1 o'clock start because the game's over by 4:30 and I have the rest of the afternoon to go do something, maybe go get dinner. So I like that. As a media member, you know what? I always like the 3:30 kickoffs at Notre Dame. You get the nice afternoon. You get a little nightfall. You get the lights on at Notre Dame Stadium. So I guess if I'm a fan, 1, as a media member, 3:30.
Yeah, for me, it's 1:30. I loved it when Notre Dame still had those 1:30 kickoffs. Noon's a little bit too early. Anything after 8 o'clock is too late because you're pushing into midnight. And whether you're a media guy who's got to file a story or do whatever kind of report and keep working after the game, or a fan who's got to drive home after the game after that. True. I mean, I've been on those where I have been working, but where I've gone to Purdue and Michigan State, which don't seem like they're that far away. But when you've got those 8:30 kickoffs and then you've got to drive home afterwards, which a lot of fans in this area will do. I mean, that's a pretty late get home time after that. You're talking wee hours of the morning.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the prime time's just tough on everybody.
Yep. So again, 1:30 I think is perfect. Noon is a little bit too early, but 1:30, kind of like you said, either way, you've either got time to drive home afterwards or do other stuff if you're watching on TV. So I've always been
that.
A fan of the 1:30s. Okay.
I'll buy that.
Now, I promised a DeShone Kizer question, and he's been under the closely watchful eye of head coach Hugh Jackson at the Browns OTAs here over the last several days. And a recent article on Cleveland.com suggests Kizer could be on the, quote, fast track to become a starter. So, would it be better or worse for Kizer to start early this season in his career?
See, this is the trap. because this always seems to happen in OTAs or in exhibition games. Guys look absolutely unbelievable. The next Roger Staubach is in camp. And then you get to real action, and more times than not, you see the rookies need a little more time getting ready for their opportunity. I'm still going to be very, very cautious. I remember some of the inaccurate throws from the 2017 campaign. I still remember he completed 49% of his passes in the fourth quarter last year for the Fighting Irish, and those are against college defenses. So I'm still going to be very, very cautious. I'm not saying he can't be a great quarterback, but I'm just looking at past history, or I should say recent history, and I'm going to say just take your time, Cleveland.
I agree, and I think that the only silver lining to come out of the fact that Kizer ended up going in the second round is it kind of took the pressure of the expectations of being the potential franchise savior off of him, because that always happens to the quarterback who goes in the first round instead, and the long list of Browns quarterbacks is well documented, and Kizer and the Irish, of course, you know, criticized for winning just four games last year, but the Irish won 14 games in Kizer's last 2 years, while the Browns have played six quarterbacks and won just four games in that period. So I just think there's no benefit to him being thrown into the fire early. Let Cody Kessler, Brock Osweiler kind of take that. Let them be the sack dummies early on for a Browns team that's still going to be rebuilding. And then the later Kizer gets into the season, the better he'll look once things have gone bad for the Browns, the better he'll look. Everything that he does that's good will look even that much better for him down the road.
And, Sean, let me add this. Dak Prescott was the exception. He walked into an unbelievable situation with arguably the best offensive line down in Dallas. They drafted Zeke Elliott out of Ohio State. You have a couple of really good wide receivers, a grand old tight end that can still get the job done in Jason Witten. And all he had to do, and you hate to say it, but was just not screw up the Porsche. The Porsche was ready to go. He was handed the keys, and he did some great things, don't get me wrong. But he was able to succeed as a rookie mainly because he had an unbelievable cast around him. Compare Cleveland to Dallas, it's night and day.
No, exactly, and they kept things very vanilla for him as well. They didn't have him taking a lot of chances down the field. There were a lot of checkdowns. There were plays that could have been made if a veteran were in there that weren't made. But now the step for Prescott, I mean, Prescott did spoil it for a lot of guys, but the next step for him is can he start to do a lot of those things that they protected him from last year. So there is another side to that as well. I mean, the chances that he's going to have the kind of season that he had this year in this next year, that he's going to match it either this coming year or the year after, they're pretty slim. Even though he does still have a lot of that around him, there's going to be more put on his plate. And the more you start putting on a young quarterback's plate, the more chances you have to get into trouble.
Oh, there'll be some whimpering on Dallas Sports Radio for Tony Romo probably a couple of times this year when Dak struggles.
I mean, don't even get started on that. I'm sure you've seen
it's coming.
The stuff where the Dallas executives, they're not even convinced that Romo's really hanging it up. And, I mean, I don't know why they would want to bring him back into the mix just because of all the stuff that can potentially blow up in your face when you start having who should be starting and all that kind of stuff. But whatever, that's for them down there to worry about. All right, on to some baseball now. Given the Cubs' struggles through the season's first 2 months, both Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon are saying that rather than looking to make the big blockbuster trades, they're looking for more internal solutions. They're going to go primarily with the guys that they have. Do you buy or sell the approach?
I absolutely don't buy that, and I don't know if that's reality.
Huh.
I don't know. Is that speak? Because why would you not be aggressive when you have arguably one of the best nucleuses in Major League Baseball? You don't want to waste Rizzo and Bryant and that group. I don't think a year goes by that you can't go for it. I mean, this is what you've been building toward. And to just go with options within, I just can't imagine because, Sean, I look at it from this standpoint. The starting pitching has aged quicker than they hoped. give me the names of the people within the system that are going to be able to take over for John Lackey or another person to become the fifth starter in place of Eddie Butler. I don't know who they are. Maybe they feel like Trevor Clifton at AA can be that guy. He was with South Bend in 2015. But I just don't think you can eliminate any possibilities at this point. This is a team, despite losing six in a row and being under 500, is built for now. And to allow a year to go by with this nucleus and not trying to do something to make them drastically better, I'm very, very surprised by that, and I would be surprised if that ends up being reality.
Well,
but I will say this real quick. Again, I'm the one person that looks at the Cubs system, having watched a lot of these guys. I don't believe the system is as deep as some people think. I think it's not as deep, and they may not be able to get that wow guy unless they get rid of Eloy Jimenez, who is their big, big chip right now.
It might not even be Jimenez. They might have to give up major league talent to try to get some of that. And as we've talked,
you're right,
those decisions start getting a lot tougher. And so I understand the line of thinking that you're talking about, that if you've got all these guys, now is your time. But the other side of that is, now if you've gone 108 years since winning the World Series and you need a key piece like Aroldis Chapman last year, and that's going to put you over the top, you make the move. You give up the big-time prospect like Gleyber Torres. And no matter what happens this year in the next or in the next 15 years, that trade will have always been worth it because they have won that championship now. So they have that in their pocket. So if they don't win the World Series, they don't get Chapman or someone of that caliber. You know, it was... That was a now or never type situation. They went out and made the bold move, and mm-hmm. it paid off. I think there are still some people who are saying, was it really worth it to give up Gleyber Torres? Well, yeah, because you won the frickin' World Series, and now you've broken the curse. You can mortgage the future for the sake of winning it all now. So they've already gone down that road, and they have that championship. So now I think the fact that they have the championship, they don't have to worry about all this talk about curses and everything else. That's why I don't think that it's worth it to keep cashing in chips now, because they already have that. So you can kind of sit back a little bit. Yeah, they can still maybe make some minor moves, but I don't think they have to go out and make big, bold moves to try to win now. You can still do the best you can over the course of this season. And then, okay, you're probably going to lose Jake Arrieta. There were some that would argue that that's not such a bad thing right now. Right. You look at what's available on the free agent market. You regroup. You've still got that core of guys together if you don't give up big league talent, and then you make another run at it next year. I'm not saying you completely just forget about this year and you're not trying to win, but you do have the championship. That's the most important thing. And you keep all those guys together and live to fight another day.
The Cubs do have their championship. And you can ask a lot of Cub fans, all they wanted is one. And you know what? They're lying. They want a second one. After you get one, you want a second one.
Right.
I lived that with the Broncos. All I ever wanted was one after losing all those Super Bowls. And now I'm greedy as heck. And I'm glad they got two, and I'm glad they got three. But again, I can't sit here and say, you have Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, boom, 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 all these guys. You have to do whatever you can to win now. I don't know how you can worry about 2 years from now. To me, so many of these prospects get blown up to be something that they really aren't. They get overplayed. People see these Baseball America lists. And how many times do these guys not turn out to be anything? So I don't think you can fall in love with your prospects. This is a team built for now. I don't care if they're under 500. You've got to fix this team. And I have no problem burning chips, because you've got draft picks coming up. You got the extra draft pick with St. Louis taking Dexter Fowler in free agency. So you've got another pick early on in the draft. You'll be able to rebuild your system. Hey, the Cubs took, 15 of the first 16 picks last summer were pitchers. So this system is a little short on position players now. I will grant you that. And it probably hurts us at our level a little bit with some of the position players that were not taken last year when pitchers were by the Cubs. So each draft, you got opportunities to rebuild. The Cubs will be back in the international free agent mode next year after having to basically set out this year with a very limited amount of money. So they're going to be able to to revamp the minor league system, but I can't sit on my hands and not do anything with the roster they have right now, even if you won last year. Every year is different. If you're not here to win this year, I absolutely have no idea what you're waiting on.
Well, again, where they're sitting right now, is it worth it to go out and make big, bold moves? Okay, if it's Eloy Jimenez.
Awful division.
Yeah. Would you give up Jimenez? Would you give up Jimenez, well, for Chris Archer, for example? That's a name that I've seen in the last few days, the Tampa Bay pitcher.
I would heavily have to consider that, and I am the biggest Eloy Jimenez fan after watching him play last year.
Okay, now.
You've heard me speak so highly of him. But if you have a chance to get a marquee player in return, and if you have him under control for a couple of years, I don't know how you can't do it. I mean, Eloy is a guy that's been hurt a lot so far in his minor league career. There's no guarantee he's going to be a guy that plays 130 games a year. I hope so, because I'm a big fan. But he missed the first 30 games this year. He missed how many games with South Bend last year? Is he going to be like Jorge Soler and get injured a lot and not fulfill his potential? You know, that's very realistic. So I just feel like if it is a difference maker player, you have to consider it. And this is still win time for the Cubs. They have a huge window right now with the nucleus of their baseball team, and I cannot waste a second with this group.
What if it's, okay, Chris Archer has some control. The team will have control for the next few years. What if it's Johnny Cueto, who's going to be a free agent after the year? So, yeah, so I mean, that, and that's where you kind of have to draw the line, because if it is Chris Archer, for example, it might be more than just Jimenez. It might be Jimenez and or Ian Happ, Javi Baez, something along those lines, where they're giving up both prospects and current big league, because they don't have as much leverage, I don't think, right now. I just think it's a completely different mindset, though, when you've won compared to when you're chasing that title, what you're willing to give up in exchange to get it.
I can solve your problem. Tell Jim Henry years ago not to trade Chris Archer in the first place, and you'd have him.
There you go.
That's reality. They traded away Chris Archer for Matt Garza. Oh, my gosh, Theo's got to be saying, why? I walk in the door, I could have had Chris Archer on my team.
Yeah.
Why did you trade him? So, all right, well, different standpoints. Again, the player that would be involved in a trade would obviously alter our conversation, but I'm not giving up on this group. They can win the NL Central with 87 wins. And if they get in, you name me a team that's not going to be afraid of the Chicago Cubs.
Well, and theoretically, with the team that they have right now, because we've said this, there is so much talent, and we've seen what they were capable of just a year ago, where they stand in the Central right now and what they have on the roster, you can see why Theo and Joe would be saying what they're saying, because they know what these guys are capable of. So in theory, they shouldn't have to go out really and make that many moves, especially considering the way the Central is bunched up right now.
Like my Dodgers National League Championship pick right now. They're playing awfully, awfully well.
That's right. All right, you want to take a break and try to get back and
let's
wrap
it
up with a couple? Okay, we've got a Jake Arrieta question coming up after we take our timeout.
All right, Sports Beat on WSBT. Sports Beat continues on WSBT Radio. Maybe we can sneak in one final rapid-fire question before we go to Cubs baseball.
All right. I wanted to get this one in. We were going to bring it up yesterday. It's about Jake Arrieta. He pitched better today, but, of course, over the weekend against the Dodgers, he gave up 4 runs in 6 innings. And after that start, his agent, Scott Boras, the agent of agents, told reporters that Arrieta's steady drop in velocity is not a concern, saying, quote, "All the elite pitchers drop in velocity," end quote. And Arrieta is without a doubt an elite pitcher, according to Boras. So, are his claims fact or fiction?
Well, I would say his client is in his 30s, and he will not be paid like one of the best players in Major League Baseball. I would be shocked if he gets an enormous deal unless he really has a tremendous second half of the season. I mean, I still think he's an above-average pitcher. I think he pitched well today from what I've read, gave up a home run. Otherwise, he was really good today. So he has pieced together some good starts back-to-back-to-back, has given up a few home runs in those starts. That's the red flag. But the velocity being down, not sure I'm going to buy his reasoning. I still think that is a major, major concern.
Yeah, I think when you look at numbers from Jake Arrieta's ERA getting bigger to his velocity going down, I don't think he is an elite pitcher right now. I think he is a good pitcher, but he is far from elite right now. And as far as the velocity dropping, Boris tried to cite how Max Scherzer, when he was in Detroit, his velocity was fluctuating, and it's back at where it was right now. But the difference is, according to Brooks Baseball, who tracks this kind of stuff, Scherzer had minor deviations from one year to the next, maybe within a half mile an hour, that kind of stuff. When you go back and you look at Arrieta, since 2014, he has seen a steady decline every year since 2014 in his both his fastball and his sinker velocity, and he's dropped about 2 miles an hour since then. He's sitting in the low 90s right now, and if you're low 90s velocity, that does not make you an elite major league pitcher. So I'm selling the whole thing. He's got a lot of things to get figured out, and it's a tough time for him because, as you said, he's in his 30s and he's in his free agency season.
Save the rest of Rapid Fire for tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds and Legacy Heating and Air. For Sean, I'm Darren. Sports Beat is now done. Cubs baseball comes your way next on WSBT South Bend.